Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
From Hollywood, California, the horror capital of the world, the Boulay Brothers, Creatures of the Night.
Hello, my beautiful little blood dolls. It's Juan Thule here to welcome you to another brilliant and blood-soaked episode of the Boulay Brothers' Creatures of the Night. Joining me, as always, is my sibling in sin, the daughter of darkness herself, Dracmorda. Dracmorda, darling, how are you tonight?
I'm doing fabulous. Just sipping this wonderful coffee you made us.
A fresh brew.
Sitting here with our books and computers, like smart little podcasters. You have your glasses on.
I know, one of the many fantasies.
We're smart.
We really are.
We are smart,
we're
Sherry.
Doing
Don't
it.
Get it twisted.
You know what? We're doing it. Cheers.
Cheers to the girls' weekend. You almost spilled that on me. All right, so I'm doing great, and I'm getting excited because we are officially leaving for tour in a few hours.
Yes.
The U.S. tour, of course. We already did the U.K. tour, as you all already know. But it's time to start on the U.S. tour, which is much longer than the U.K.
Double the power. It's 23 cities from coast to coast. And I have to say, I am really excited about it, too. I think we've been gearing up for this for so long. And it's really a test of the brand and us and our met and metal and all of the competitors. I'm super excited. I know the fans are maybe even more excited than we are. And I cannot wait to hit the road.
I'm so proud of all the competitors, and I know we said that on the last episode, but I want to say it again because they're all, without being prompted, changing up their shows and doing all this new stuff, and I'm so excited to see what Saint comes up with.
Girl, she is doing it.
I love it.
It's so inspired.
Yes, it is. So I can't wait to see all that. I'm excited. We're going to have a lot of guest stars, which hopefully by now have been announced, and if they haven't, I'm going to break the news right here. Yes, we have a bunch of guest stars from the Blade Brothers Dragula that are going to be joining us at different stops across the country. I don't have it all off the top of my head, but a few that I can think of are Violencia in Boston.
Yeah.
We have Yovska in Buffalo, I believe. Priscilla is joining us, but I don't remember which stop she's at.
Well, don't give them everything because there's many more. I think we have like 15 guest performers through the course of the tour.
Yeah. And we have Zavaleta and Madeline Hatter in New York. In LA, we have Bitch Pudding, our season 2 winner. We have Bitter Betty. We have Kendra, of course.
The
so
legendary
happy.
Kendra
The legendary
Onyx.
Kendra Onyx, darling. I can't wait to see Kendra.
Oh, I know. It's so fun.
Louisiana's joining us first up. This is really exciting. I can't wait for this one in particular. Pinche and Zochi from season 1 are joining us, which
yes.
I'm so excited about.
Yes.
James Majesty is joining us in Seattle, I believe.
It is going to be so fun to just be able to see the extended family joined in various forms through this tour. It's going to be really good.
And Coco and Astrid are going to be in Phoenix. And I bet Formaldehyde will be there too, but I don't know. We'll see.
Yes. Formelda. Formelda.
I don't want to mess with Formelda because Formelda doesn't want to perform and I don't want to make her perform. I'm like, yes, queen. Give us no shows. I'm here for it. It's working. Just don't mess with her, okay?
I love it. I
post thirst trap pictures and masks and you're good.
I really do love it. She knows her brand.
I think so too.
Okay, so what else do we have going on? Oh, we do want to apologize for anyone who will be unable to attend the Boulay Brothers Dragula Season 4 U.S. tour because we're just like dangling this in front of you. But We do feel bad, but we're not leaving you without entertainment, because right now we are also being featured on Shudder as one of the curators, and we put together a collection of movies that we sort of like love that are being featured on Shudder right now. So if you're unable to make the show, you can cozy up at home with a blanket and some snacks. You know,
some
snacks.
What's that?
Remember our girls from that podcast? They were like, let's get spooky, so grab your snacks.
Oh, snacks. Your snacks and blankies, as
exactly.
They think, right?
Oh, I live.
The ghoul friends.
Exactly.
Let's talk a little bit about the movies that we did pick
that
are highlighted on Shudder. So we have The Cabinet of Dr. Caligari, which is sort of like, I would say, a movie that inspired many movies after it, probably to this day, right?
Oh, absolutely. We also have the quintessential haunted house movie, which we've talked about many, many times on the podcast, The Old Dark House, going back to 1932, where you can actually see a drag king. I'll say the first drag king on film I've ever seen. So keep your eyes peeled. There's a lot of queer subtext throughout that film. It's very interesting.
I'm sure there's a drag king that has been on film somehow in the first movie that was ever made, and some stooge is going to come flying out of left field and cancel you. But whatever. Bring it on.
That's the new mood for the new
bring
super future.
It on. No, don't bring it on. Don't at me, for real.
Wow.
What else? Night of the Living Dead? I mean, amazing, right?
For sure. There's Black Christmas, Black Sunday, Terror Train, Prom Night, Halloween 4, The Taking of Deborah Logan, which I think is like such a sleeper horror movie, like so scary.
Yes.
The Autopsy of Jane Doe. That's so good. Oh my God.
The last scene in The Taking of Deborah Logan is what I'm going to start doing to every winner at the end of their season. So before we crown the next one, that's their fate. So I'm like, for 1 year, you get a fabulous life, and then I'm going to eat you.
We reabsorb your powers.
Yeah. And then redistribute it. I think that's fair.
I think that's fair.
Would you rather live a full life that sucks, or 1 year that's fabulous? Think about it.
It's a tough choice.
Yeah. The Autopsy of Jane Doe, too, like sleeper hit as well.
So good.
Yeah. I'm not going to tell you anything about it, because if you haven't seen it, you should watch it.
Yeah, absolutely.
If you do watch any of these movies, make sure you tag Shudder and tell them about our excellent taste so that they should just keep us as the guest curators for eternity.
And if you don't agree with our choices, well, then you always have the option of saying nothing and keeping your mouth shut forever.
Exactly. That's perfectly aligned with our next subject. So if any of you are at home, because people always ask us when we're at a meet and greet, they'll be like, why did you block me? I didn't do anything. That's a lie, okay? Because if you didn't do anything, you wouldn't be blocked.
And I live, because we were at DragCon 1 year, and a fan came charging up to us, and it was cool because exciting. DragCon has tons of energy, and it was very that. It was, I'm such a big fan, you guys blocked me, and it was for no good reason, because we're just kind of beelining it through the crowds, because that's what you have to do at DragCon if you want to get from point A to point B. And at the I didn't do anything, Drax stops mid stride, turns, and is like, that's a lie, because if you didn't do anything, you wouldn't be blocked. And cue the jaw drop, the flip turn, and then we were stomping through the auditorium. It was amazing.
Those of you that don't know, I'm going to let you know now. The Blade Brothers Dragula Seasons 2 and 3 have joined the Blade Brothers Dragula Season 4 and Resurrection to nearly complete the library on Shudder. And they're available to stream in all English-speaking territories right now.
It's so exciting, and I know so many fans were just wringing their thumbs and biting at the bit for this to happen, to be able to go back and see probably some of their favorite moments from the legendary seasons 2 and 3 and get one step closer to completing the entire library of Dragula.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like season 2, there's things that I forget about the show that now I'm seeing new memes and different things pop up, and I'm like, oh yeah, that did happen on our show.
Yeah.
Yeah. What are some of your favorite moments?
Oh, I mean, season 2, I think for so many people, it was sort of like a breakout season for us. It was where we went from something more like a pilot format, six episodes, to a bona fide 10-episode series with some monsters from coast to coast. And it was really exciting. I mean, the standout moment for me is still Wasteland Weekend, the Thunderdome.
Oh, yeah, I mean, that was fun.
It was just electricity in the air. And the way that those crazy kids that were out there in the desert doing battle and shooting guns and all that stuff, when the drag came out and they started whipping each other's asses, they said, these are some of the nastiest fights we've seen all day. And I was like, yes.
Yeah, it was fabulous. And, you know, also the photos that our director, Nathan Noyes, took of them from Wasteland Weekend are still so iconic to me. I'm going to do a re-release of those pictures.
That's
actually
a good idea.
They were fabulous.
No, they were really good.
Yeah. So, and everyone's excited. Bitch made a video kind of promoting the release, which I thought was really cool.
No,
I appreciated
super cool.
That.
Yeah. Disasterina in the Cabin in the Woods is also like a standout moment for me.
Absolutely.
Which is like getting her pussy murdered. You don't get to see that kind of TV gold very often. But we saw it in season 2.
And I just realized how we just would lean into things with no holds barred. Like, the sci-fi episode, the Star Wars scrolling text,
totally.
And them giving birth. I was like, wow, we would never do that today.
maybe we will. Maybe we will. Exactly. I love it. It's so good. And for those of you that know, you know. And for those of you that don't, there's a lot of binging that you have ahead of you on Shudder right now.
Yeah, and season 1, which we've talked about before, is getting remastered currently and will be released as well on Shudder, and that'll be a sort of new iteration, which I think is looking really good. I'm very happy with it. We've said before that season 1 is like a pilot season, and that's not to degrade it. That's not the intention of it. That's realistically what it was.
Yeah, it was like proof of concept, because we've said this many times, when we imagined trying to pitch this show, it was like, ooh, how do you get someone who's just straight-laced and like doesn't know anything about anything to understand it's monsters and filth and horror and drag and it's fear and all that stuff? It would have been a hard sell, so we just decided to create it.
Yeah, it was too weird. It was too weird, but I just think we were so determined. We were like, I don't care. I know it's going to work, and here it is.
Exactly.
It's cringy for me to watch, I'll say. It really is. I mean, I love it, but it's hard to watch.
I think anyone who looks back at themselves, even like 5 years in their craft, whatever it might be, and they're like, ooh, I could have done that different. And I think that's all it is. These are our roots, honey.
Oh, yeah.
As twisted and ugly as they might be, I am so proud of what they are and where they brought us.
Yeah, I agree.
Speaking of twisted, ugly, and roots, I think it's time we bring in our assistant and our Sith apprentice, Ian, to the podcast. Ian, darling, welcome to the show.
Excited to see Ian. Not excited to see Ian's pads.
Hi, how's it going?
Oh, what is that, your favorite season 2 quote?
Oh my God. When you were talking about the new memes that are coming out, I was also reminded, and I saw a picture of Dali in their season 2 confessional look. And that was the quote. Excited to see Moniki, not excited to see Moniki's pads. And to this day, Durla, an underrated moment from the show.
Yeah.
So totally. Good.
Bitch at 1.2, bitch is like, oh, you don't accept me as like a monster queen or something. And she was like, okay. Like, she's so drunk.
Damn, there's another moment too on that Ghost of the West challenge when she's like, now she's your new best friend.
Oh, yeah, when James.
I love when for no reason Moniki and James decide to be teammates
episode 2.
I lived. They're like,
know.
We're gonna go in there and get bitch. And just no matter what she said, they were like gonna come for her.
Oh, totally.
Yeah.
Truly, one of my favorite moments of season 2 is Kendra cobbling the shoe.
Episode one.
I need to know the real tea, Abora. Damn.
Titties on, bitch.
Put some titties on, bitch.
Kendra just was always coming out with the one-liner.
If you want to roll around in some grass, it's a lot of grass.
Totally.
I mean, Kendra Onyx is an icon.
Yeah.
Truly an iconic character in television history.
I agree.
Let's not forget Vicky's comeback. Why, you got your outfit in the Halloween section at Walgreens.
Amazing.
Well, I thought it was crazy. So then after the season, Victoria goes home. She puts Kendra's quote on her story. Then she shows herself casting titties.
Oh my God,
slamming
yes,
them around,
yes.
Putting them on. And I was like, ooh, okay.
Oh my God. I mean, truly though, like the genesis of what I truly believe is like the Victoria Black tit plate.
Yeah.
Like,
oh,
mama,
yeah.
Those is jugs.
Oh my God. I was like, Victoria.
Oh my God. I live. I'm like, mama, these are up to your neck. Like,
yeah.
Literally up to your throat.
Well, we got some made from her too, which
yeah.
We wore one time on season 3. And I was like, you're insane.
I live. Oh my God. For eagle-eyed viewers, go look through season 3 and see if you can spot where it is. Because I remember when y'all showed up to set that day, I was like, mama, the boulets are jugsy
like,
today.
This is not correct.
Tonight, we're going for the jugular.
Anyways, there's so many good moments. And who knows what will happen on tour? We've booked some of them at the same time. Like, I'm like, I forgot about it. I didn't even think about this. Madeline and Zava. I'm I didn't think about that when we booked
them.
Well,
who knows? Things change in Dragula world. It can go one way or the other, and no one knows.
Yeah, because sometimes I think they're like friends, and then sometimes I'm like, what's going on here?
I mean, to quote Coco, maybe that's a New York thing. Like, one minute they fight, and one minute they hug, and one minute they stab in each other. You never know. New York is weird
like
that.
Yeah.
Well, I can't wait to see it either way.
Well, Ian, why don't we use this moment to segue into some news updates that you might be bringing to us on this episode.
For all passengers aboard this dark-sided Slaanesh Sissy spacecraft, it is my pleasure to inform you that we have set a course for the depths of the horror universe, and while many of you may most definitely perish on this hellish journey into the unknown, those of you that survive will experience eldritch nightmares and announcements from the orbiting planets of Hollywood and horror, the likes of which you cannot comprehend. Up first on the darkened event horizon, our ship's radar has detected two announcements to tap on the black mirror glass of our screens in the days to come. Deadline leads our list of announcements tonight with the news that actress Zoe Bell, most famously known for her leading role in Robert Rodriguez's Death Proof and as Uma Thurman's stunt double in the Kill Bill films, will be bringing her quarantined YouTube project to life as the feature-length action comedy film released by Lionsgate. The original YouTube short, titled Boss Bitch Fight Challenge, featured a huge list of deadly female badasses, including Lucy Lawless, Juliette Lewis, Margot Robbie, and the incomparable Daryl Hannah, to name a few, fighting each other in a series of self-filmed videos edited together in the style of other similar quarantine pass-the-brush makeup challenges that were popular at the time. Not to be upstaged, Variety led the shambling charge this week with a confirmed release date for a project synonymous with spooky season. Yes, my ghoulish goons, the official Spirit Halloween movie will be haunting abandoned grindhouse theaters this year. Described as a family adventure horror movie, the film will reportedly follow a group of middle school friends who have dared each other to survive the night in a new Spirit Halloween store that has mysteriously appeared in a deserted strip mall overnight, only to find it filled with vengeful spirits and deadly animatronics. Interested listeners can check out this ghoulish case of art imitating life, October 2022.
What do we do if we're not interested?
Yeah.
Oh, then you do not tune in October 2022. Okay. Yeah.
I was kind of interested at first. I was like, this is a neat concept. But then when I found out it was like a
family friendly.
I was like, totally. Exactly. No.
I was like, oh, this is cute. Family. Like next.
Plus, I was in a mall. I'm like, how scary could a little like 20 by 20 story be?
I don't know. I want to be on board, but I'm not ready for going back to the Goonies or going back to Ghostbusters Afterlife. I'm done with kids' movies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, me too. Same.
Same. At this point, I'm also filled with vengeful spirits and weird animatronics. And they have no room for kids.
Our masks could have been in the Halloween store, and we could have came out and killed the kids. See, there you go.
It's not too late.
I mean, Mama, there's still time to, you know, shoot this, film it, get it in there. For a quick detour headed for a crash landing where video games and horror collide, the 18th annual BAFTA Game Awards celebrated achievements in gaming earlier this week, with horror video games dominating the 2021 landscape. Among the nominees for various categories across the awards ceremony were genre titles such as the frenetic zombie co-op shooter Back 4 Blood, time-bending psychological thriller Deathloop, and of course, Please Vampire Mommy Step on Me Simulator Resident Evil Village, to name a few. The shining dark star of the evening, however, was undoubtedly the coveted Game of the Year award, which went to developer Housemarque's sci-fi horror bullet hell shooter, Returnal. Being a nerd who loves video games and lives in the horror world, this has never felt better.
So which game are you most excited to try out?
Okay, truly, I have been wanting to play Returnal since the PS5 came
out. Really?
Mama, this has been on my radar for at least a year and a half.
Okay.
But I think that fans of the podcast will definitely want me to say Resident Evil Village so we can have the Draken Swan mod for that character.
Totally. If that's not enough, the name Returnal now goes on the long list of options for a Dragula All-Stars name.
Ooh! Diving deeper into the abyssal black hole of the horror universe, one of the most iconic props in horror film history has just been set for auction, with a screen-used fire axe wielded by Jack Nicholson in The Shining, netting a starting bid of $55,000. As with most film props meant to be used on screen, there were several axes made for the film, with as many as a dozen fabricated and documented by behind-the-scenes photography of the Stanley Kubrick classic. This specific axe carries the distinction of being one of a few actually used on camera, with another axe prop recently fetching $209,000 at auction. Avid or rabid horror film fans with money to burn can bid on the axe now for their chance to at least have the most accurate Jack Torrance costume at the next Boulay Brothers Halloween ball.
Interesting. I'm going to sell some of our props.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Put them in the museum, Mama.
Yeah, I'm like, Patrick, go unload all this stuff and put it on eBay. No, but there's actually a lot of neat items from the show that just sort of live in the office. I feel like maybe it'd be better appreciated by the fans.
Yeah, I don't know that I would sell them. Like, I've actually kind of secretly squirreled them away in Swanthula's own version of the Dragula Museum.
Yes.
I have, like, the nameplate from the Boulay Brothers Productions door on the opener of season 2.
Mm-hmm.
Erica's voodoo doll from her death scene. A couple of medical instruments that we did for the opener when we were doing the Hospital of Horrors from season 3.
Nice.
Wait, I have Madeline's decapitated head from
yes!
the house.
And Landon's spider compact is around somewhere
oh,
too.
Oh, yeah.
I have that. Yeah. I have like two of Saint's moths from Resurrection as
oh,
well.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
And I think Vander still has the prize from the Dungeons and Drag Queens challenge. Like, I forget what it was. It was like a vial of like, oh, the
oh,
dragon's blood.
Yeah. The demon's blood.
The demon's blood. So Vander, if you're listening, I'm coming for that ass.
That concludes our journey through the cosmic horror hellscape of current events for tonight. As always, I have been your captain, Miss Ian DeVogler, and if you need me, I'll be in my cryosleep pod watching the black and white version of Guillermo del Toro's Nightmare Alley, now available on Hulu.
All right, we're going to take a quick break, and when we return, we're going to be digging into this episode's creature feature movie review. Stay tuned.
Attention, misfits, mutants, and outcasts. The Boulay Brothers want you to join the cult now by visiting BouleyBrothersDragula.com, where everything from the world of the Boulay Brothers can be found. Be sure to sign up for the newsletter for insider updates, learn more about upcoming projects, and access tons of Boulay Brothers and Boulay Brothers Dragula exclusive merchandise. Visit us now at BouleyBrothersDragula.com. Do it or die.
Welcome back, Uglies, and welcome to this episode's Creature Feature Movie Review. As I've said many, many times, I am a bit of a vampirophile, and I'm also feeling a bit nostalgic, so I've decided to flip my magic hourglass in reverse and go back to 1987 and review Joel Schumacher's vampire classic, The Lost Boys. So let me just preface this with, you're welcome. And for those of you who have been living in a seaside sunken cave for the last 30 years, The Lost Boys is the tale of two brothers who, after moving to a new town, discover it's a haven for vampires. So, ladies, let's start with first impressions on a rewatch, because I think for many of you, listeners and you guys as well, it's been a while.
Oh, yeah. For me, it has definitely been at least a decade. I did not remember the big plot twist of the movie at all. I didn't remember how characters lived, died, flew, and ate maggots. I did remember the eating maggots, but this was basically a brand new watch for me.
And?
Oh, and I fucking loved it. It was great.
That's the part I was waiting for.
Yeah. I know we're going to sink our fangs into this one, but I will say I watched it in two parts, which was kind of a strange experience because I started watching it last night and I was like, oh, mama, I'm so tired, but I'll watch the second half tomorrow. And I feel like the second half of The Lost Boys goes the fuck off. The first half is a lot of setup. You know, we're kind of like, oh, it's the murder capital of the world. Cute, cute, cute. Kiefer Sutherland looking snacky, but yeah, there's not a whole lot of like vampire in going around until the second half, which is like
sure.
The fantasy.
It's weird because I also kind of love the first half, and I think in many ways some people think of the second half, it goes the fuck off the rails, like it builds like a mythology that could potentially even run deep and continue.
Mm-hmm.
And you're maybe not sure where the story is going to go, but it kind of goes the route of very Hollywood where it has to be mass extinction with grandpa like coming in with the weird horn. It goes straight to Hollywood hell.
Oh yeah.
But you know, it's all awesome.
Yeah, I mean, it was fun. It was a fun rewatch. It's been a while. I mean, I remember that movie being so influential to goth alternative people back in the day. So
oh,
many people
totally.
Live and love for this movie. And yeah, it was a really fun rewatch. Like at first I was like, you know, the Corey Haim of it all. I'm like, oh, I can't do this. Like this Gremlins 80s gobbledygook bullshit again. Like I'm not, you know what I mean? There's a certain,
this
yeah.
has it in spades across the board.
Yeah,
the
like all the usual suspects mm-hmm. are present. And I'm, you know, Bill and Ted's Excellent Vampire shows
oh my
up.
God,
like,
totally.
No, I'm not. But then I'm like, you know what? No,
you're
no,
like,
no.
Yes, you are,
I'm like, yes, I'm into it. I'm cool with it. I will say, much to Ian's chagrin, I find all of the vampires extremely unattractive. So that part of it, I forgot. And I was like, what's going on? I thought these were like hot vampires. Like, I remember them being like attractive, or people being like, ooh, these vampires are hot and sexy. I'm like, Not really.
Well, first of all, one, you would never disappoint me, Drac. Like, not in that way or in any other way. Like, I could never be disappointed with your taste in Kiefer Sutherland or even in The Thing. You have Kurt Russell's incredible wig, too.
It may be that I grew up in the South, where people still maintain that look for a long time, well after its expiration date. So I'm like, I hate you all.
Oh, girl, I'm like, okay, Kiefer Sutherland as David, I'm like, that hair is back, mama. Like, there are so many, I mean, like, DTLA hoes who have that haircut.
Maybe with the exception of Bill and Ted's Excellent Vampire, I think the whole pack of boys are
really?
I was like, ooh, it's so filth, horror, glamour, and drag with these wigs. I'm like, yes.
Okay, the dark hair... The jawline one,
yeah.
He's cute.
The dark-haired one is hot. But then the long blonde hair on a cape, especially after he vamps out. Oh, yes.
I gotta be real with you. The long blonde-haired one, I completely forget is in the movie until her iconic death scene via holy water bathtub. Yes. I was like, that shit is awesome.
No, it's so good. This movie gives us like a little serving of all the things that 80s movies serves. First of all, it has the soundtrack right from the get. Like, as soon as you start here, that
so good.
It takes you right there. Yes.
I was so gagged when that theme started playing because, like I said, it's been so long since I've watched this movie that I was like, wow, this sets a mood so instantly. And then I was reading later that the composer of that song had not seen a single frame of footage before he wrote it.
Well, oh my God, really? A funny thing that's similar to that, the sax guy, his name is Tim Capello.
Oh, go in, mama.
Oh, I have to. Because here's why. We were at a horror convention in the last year or two, and he's there signing autographs, and a bunch of people want to meet him. Like, his career kind of blew up like 30 years later.
Oh, my God.
And you might ask yourself why, and it's because he is a greased-up muscle queen with a chain collar and a fucking saxophone.
Oh, that saxophone guy.
Yeah, that guy.
Yes,
okay, so he's like iconic, but part of what he said was that he was like, I played with Tina Turner for like 10 years. I was on tour with her. We were super close. We talked every day.
Oh my God.
Nobody cares about that. He's like, I did this movie one night out of nowhere. I watched it once and forgot about it. And he's like, 30 years later, that's all anybody can talk about with me. They don't care about any of the other stuff. And he's like, you know, it's odd because I spent all this time being a musician. No one knew me for that. Mm-hmm. This movie that I didn't care about that I did for an hour one night has given me the life that I wanted from the music, which I think is interesting.
That's crazy.
Cool. Yeah. It might not be the life he wanted, but it's definitely the one he deserved.
Oh, definitely. I'm going to piggyback off that trivia tidbit with another one. I was reading that they cast 2,000 extras for all of those pier/boardwalk scenes, and they filmed it in one night.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, that's what he was saying. He was saying that it was just very random.
Oh, all just one. Drac and I both were watching. We were like, this B-roll is very random, but it all added up to creating that seaside carnival, almost dangerous street culture 80s, like skaters.
Especially with the song
Southern California,
too,
it was so good.
I was picturing you and Nathan watching the movie, and I was like, I bet Nathan is saying to Ian right now, this is what Drac always wants. This is what Drac's always asking us to get B-roll. This is why, so that she can build this narrative.
We literally talked about the B-roll from that sequence. Like, I paused.
So did we.
Yeah. We paused. I was like, mama, this is B-roll personified, like right here.
Establish the scene.
Totally.
Wide close-up.
Speaking of that B-roll, it's iconic for a lot of reasons, but one of the things I personally really loved was the combination of the footage that they get and also the song that plays.
Yeah. The Doors.
Yeah, it's very, very moody. I feel like that directly influences the title theme of True Blood, which we get much, much later. You know, has kind of like that gothic southern feeling and almost kind of like the degenerates of that area. I love it. It's great.
It's good.
Attacking trailer culture again, I see.
Don't at me.
And, you know, it all adds up to so much fun, right?
Absolutely.
I mean, with the theme song, all the crazy B-roll, these characters, the hair, it's very much signature of the times.
Yes.
And, you know, the 80s kind of delivered a very specific type of, like, horror comedy that we don't often see. Mm-hmm. We don't often see done successfully, right? But we kind of get that across the board. I mean, here's a question, though. Is it ever scary?
Yes. I think maybe not today. It wouldn't register as scary. But certainly back in the day when they transformed, I remember that being...
Oh, girl, even today, that like the beach bonfire kill sequence where you see them with their prosthetics on for the first time, iconic.
Okay, so that moment, I knew it was coming. I've seen this movie many times and I knew it was coming. I actually did a rewatch during pandemic too. It's like, oh, they're going to vamp out. And I'm like, this is my favorite scene. And it's not when they vamp. It's when they attack. And the flight effect is so cool. Yeah. Even though you don't really see them flying actually until the close to the end. But the way that the camera work
POV
is.
Yeah, it's really cool. Shot, yeah.
It's very effective because it could come across as like, oh girl, they can't afford the effects. So they're just doing the POV with the camera. But it's not. You kind of enjoy it. But it's when David bites right into that guy's head and you get the blood spurt. I'm like, oh, I love it so much. It's like my favorite scene.
We're not discussing one of the most important parts, though, which is in Corey Haim's character's room, there's a poster of Rob Lowe. Just wanted to point that out.
Well, let's talk about the homoeroticism because Mama, it's there for sure.
This movie, gay as hell, girl. And I live for it.
I think 80s vampires were always heavily suggested to be queer, but they never would say it. Back then, it wasn't going to happen. They weren't going to register that. They weren't going to admit that, but they always like to tease around it. Same thing with Interview with the Vampire.
Sure.
They never came out and said it, but it was so heavily implied.
I think there's something about vampires and sharing blood that isn't just inherently lend itself to just queerness among men, too, because we can go back to the 70s vampire lesbian movies, of which there are many. You know, it's just sort of an easy underlying subtext for queerness.
There was also in the 80s with the re-interest in vampires and HIV and drinking blood that sort of thing. And so that also became part of the conversation of queer culture and vampires.
No, for sure.
I mean, I think you can go even further back. I feel like vampires and the myth of Dracula have always sort of had a queerness to them, or even like the visual representations when you think of kind of like Nosferatu. Like he's very frail and thin and his fingers kind of do that, the Dolly ghouling out kind of thing. Mm-hmm. There's a sense of otherness and, you know, it's fear, this sort of frail creature that could at any moment snap and kill you.
Because there's an inherent sensuality, right? And it doesn't have to do with sexuality. So a man would get very close and touch another man with his lips, and it's not for a sexual thing, but the obvious is conjured, you know.
Oh,
you
it's usually not
like
sexual for me. So
a guy in eyeliner sucking the life force out of another guy probably has no sexual connotations to it at all. You're right.
not a single one.
I don't see it.
Not at all.
I don't.
But there is a scene when Michael goes upstairs and is about to attack his little brother, who's like,
in
the bathtub, which is very homoerotic.
Did they ever address the dog attacking him?
I don't think they ever really go into like, oh, dogs can naturally sense vampires. But I thought it was kind of a like, oh, he senses that Michael has become a predator.
I meant like, and leave it to the 80s. The dog can go flying through the air, tackle the guy out the other side of the bathroom door, and the door shuts. That's like such an 80s thing to happen.
This segues very well to like how their vampires are represented, because a lot of different vampires have lots of different power arrays, right? So what rules of vampires do they in The Lost Boys actually adhere to? And because they bend some rules too, right? Obviously, the stake through the heart is the kill move.
Wait, I just noticed something, because we're getting really serious and talking about kind of smart things about vampires, and I see you both have your glasses on today.
Mm-hmm. Oh my God.
And I don't have glasses on. So
maybe you should grab
yours. Is this a thing?
Why don't you
grab your glasses?
No, I'm not. If I do, I will not be able to see anything.
I thought you were being
serious.
You're
all feeling smart today.
If you want, I mean,
you have coffees, you have glasses. I get it.
Listen, Drac, I don't want you to get freaked out. To make you feel better, I'll make a Kiefer Sutherland sex joke. Like, I got a bunch written down,
You
Mama.
Already did.
Oh, I got more, Mama.
Sorry to drag you for your glasses.
We have stake through the heart, right? And that's probably, obviously, the most common one. We have burst into flames and sunlight.
Yep.
When David goes to grab Sam, we do see that. We see an aversion to holy water, which is a kill factor in this one.
Oh,
so that's kind of crazy. No reflection.
The head vampire did have a reflection.
Because when you invite a vampire into your home, you are rendered powerless, as informed by the Frog Brothers.
Yes, that plot element is one of my favorite things about The Lost Boys, because I think that, and I'm sure we'll dig more into it, but the power levels of the vampires is a little bit questionable sometimes, but they do a really cool bending of those rules. Like, oh, when you invite a vampire into your house, you become powerless. So suddenly garlic has no effect at the dinner scene, or there is a reflection. But we do get almost the building of that reflection aspect when Michael is looking at himself in the mirror and he's sort of transparent, almost kind of ghostly, which I've never seen.
We get introduced to this idea of a half vampire. Like he's consumed some of one of the vampire's blood, but he doesn't have like a successful kill under his belt. So at that point, he'll cross the threshold of humanity into evil.
Which is kind of like, why was Star there? I wonder how long was she there? It seemed like she was there for a minute before she got turned into. So I was like, what
and
was
Laddie
that about?
Too.
Well, then Laddie fully transforms at the end, but doesn't fully do a kill. So I don't know, maybe those rules are a little bit
Well, so in the 80s, they always lost the point of the movie. They did. They're like, we have been up for too long. We've been on set for too long. Just film something.
They're like, and we'll make it. Just send Grandpa through the wall.
If someone busts through a wall, we're good. We can wrap this shoot totally. Today.
You know, it's funny because I did a bunch of reading about the film. And one of the things I came across was that in the original script, the Lost Boys were around the ages of like 13 and 14. And Star was supposed to be much younger and was actually a boy. And so there wasn't really this romantic aspect, which I think, you know, is so 80s. Like, oh, hi, we got to throw a heterosexual romance plot into this or totally. No one's going to watch it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But in raising the ages of everyone, it creates sort of weird questions of like, Star goes, oh, I care about you so much. I'm like, girl, you don't know him. Like, you just met. Y'all ain't even had sex. And then you have sex in front of Laddie, you weirdo. Mm-hmm.
So, Child Services needs to come and take Laddie away.
Wow.
Oh, and our second movie in a row with a missing person on a milk carton.
That's right.
Yep.
The theme. Mm. You know, the actress that played Star, her great-grandfather is Bela Lugosi.
No.
What?
Wait. Shut the. Oh my God, I
damn,
hate you.
Damn.
But that wow. does. Jason Patrick, who plays Michael, his grandfather actually is Jackie Gleason, which is a little
I
bit of
know.
Hollywood history okay, there. Yeah.
Which, by the way, if you want to watch the funniest thing on earth at any time, it is The Honeymooners starring Jackie Gleason.
Get ready for the creature featured movie.
Jack, really do love it.
There is one episode that I just can't watch. It's too funny. And I'll share it with you later.
I want to see it.
Another time. But I do want to touch on this idea of garlic because I don't think that they actually adhere to that because right before the blonde is like pushed into the tub of holy water, he looks in because they filled it with garlic and he's like, ha, garlic doesn't work. And that's when he's like, try holy water. And it does. And I think that's also one of the reasons why Max was able to just eat that whole spoon of garlic, not just because he was invited into the house, but because it doesn't work in Lost Boys world.
Mm. Yeah. One thing that I would consider to be a little bit of a flaw in my mind, but hey, no movie's perfect, unless you're X, apparently, is the power level of the vampires, I feel like, is a little weak. There are some successful kills when they are ripping the hoods off of cars and doing kind of crazy stuff, but then they all sort of get destroyed in almost kind of like Home Alone-esque, like 80s Nightmare on Elm Street sort of like.
Totally.
Oh, yeah, gotcha,
it's the booby trap
house.
Yeah,
totally,
like, exactly.
Totally. I kind of live for it. I mean, the one thing that I will say, and this is what I told Nathan when we were watching, I was like, the thing to remember is this totally informs so much of how we view like 80s and 90s vampires, the styling of them, and even the sexy vampire. I feel like even with the vampire Lestat, he is a sexy character, question mark, but he's not like a hot David Lothario mama.
Well, in the book, in the he leather. Was very... very sexy.
Yeah, the sexuality is laid on very thick by Miss Rice.
All of them, of the vampires. Yeah, but again, like we were talking about earlier, never overtly said, right?
Yeah. Although it's been years since I've read those books, but you do see relationships that maybe transcend just master and thrall or whatever in Anne Rice's world.
I just remember
sure.
reading it when I was younger and being like, okay, gay vampires, perfect. This is made for me. And I'm like, where is the gay stuff? I'm like, this is as gay as it gets. You're just hanging out. I'm like, no.
I think that was definitely, like, I haven't read the books, but I've seen the films. And I think that was my first experience with kind of like, it's gay. I'm going to do big air quotes, subtext. Because I remember being a kid and watching the scene where Tom Cruise and Brad Pitt meet Antonio Banderas for the first time. And I was like, mama, that is gay tension, drama, a thruple.
The movies have absolutely nothing to do with the book. I remember when they were filming those movies and all like kind of like people that were really into like gothic subculture or vampires and stuff hated it. They hated it. Like when Tom Cruise was cast, they were like, you're casting a jock, like a fighter pilot guy to be our icon?
Oh, yeah. My God.
Fuck you. They were so mad.
I'm so not shocked by that, and I kind of live. I'm like, ooh, salty gothic tears.
Because they were like normal kind of like, you know, your stereotypical masculine guys. They were pissed.
Yeah. Well, I was a fan of both. I think it was an exciting casting because it made it an interesting, but the one that I was personally pissed about was Antonio Banderas as Armand, because Armand was actually my favorite character from the books. And he's just depicted as younger with curly hair and more Mediterranean, almost like a muse coming from hundreds of years ago, who had a very, I think, padded out and established and explored kind of homoerotic relationship with his master. His name was like Marius, I think. I was just like, ooh, I can't wait to see Armand. Like, that's my shit. I'm so excited. Yeah. And I was like, Antonio, but what?
Okay, but
oh, Miss Rice, you have fucked it all up.
Kristen Dunst as Claudia was also equally terrible, in my opinion, because I had the comic books of The Interview with the Vampire, and they were painted, and they were beautiful. If you could get your hands on them.
I mean, it must have taken them a million years.
I had the big, I bought some of the original stills. Yeah. But the character of Claudia was like so childlike, and she looked like a dog.
A little doll child.
Yeah.
In fact, it's sort of the exact inspiration for the Jar of Hearts show that we do. That's exactly what she looks like in the paintings.
Oh, okay. Speaking of the Jar of Hearts show and the outfit from that, one just kind of quick reference that I live for is that the mom's name is Lucy.
Yes.
Which is a direct reference, obviously, to, you know, Bram Stoker's Dracula, Lucy. I was like, oh, so fabulous.
And also, there's a scene when Sam's in the house and Michael is kind of getting his, like, flying power sort of manifesting. Oh, yeah. And he comes in through the window. It's almost an exact reflection of Salem's Lot when the vampire comes to the window for the first time. It's like a really striking scene. So when I saw it, I'm like, oh, it's just like watching Salem's Lot again.
So overall, it's super 80s, but it's great. We love it. Obviously, probably most people at home have watched it, but I would recommend watching it again if you haven't watched it in a minute, because it was very entertaining.
No, it's so good. It's like, oh, you're a vampire, Michael, wait, my own brother, wait till I tell mom. Oh, so good. Well, that's it for this episode's Creature Feature Movie Review. We are going to be reaching into our bag of listener mail to answer some of your burning questions, but before we do, it's time for a quick break.
Calling all misfits, mutants, and outcasts. The Boulay Brothers Dracula Season 4 U.S. Tour will be terrorizing a city near you this spring, featuring the Boulay Brothers and the top four monsters of Season 4. Tickets and VIP upgrades are available and going fast, so if you'd like the chance to experience the Dracula show live, get your tickets now at DraculaLive.com before they're all gone.
Welcome back, darlings. It's time to grab your snacks and get cozy, because it's time to dig into our mailbox and answer all of your listener questions. Ian, will you do the honors?
Todd from LA asks, we just finished watching WandaVision. Since I can always count on Drac Morta to share their opinions on pretty much everything, I am really curious what she thought of the interpretation of Agatha Harkness, specifically the change in her age. I felt that an older Gladys Kravitz-type character might have served the story better than the sassy young soubrette.
Yeah, I was surprised about that because Agatha Harkness is traditionally very, very, very old. That's her thing. That's her look. She's like the quintessential
granny hag.
Granny hag. No, not really a hag. She's like an uppity British kind of granny with like a shawl and a little pendant, right?
With an updo.
Yeah, I kept thinking in WandaVision at the end, maybe it was going to be an illusion. They were going to like reveal something and she was secretly like this old granny, but she wasn't. So I think Catherine Hahn did such an amazing job of portraying Agatha Harkness that I'm okay with it. I do a little bit wish she was old like she is in the comics, but, you know, maybe she'll get there in the Doctor Strange movie. Maybe they will age her somehow.
I love it.
I want to know if they're going to age whoever's going to play Madame Web. Because I'm like, in the comics, that is a granny hag, mama.
She is. She's Madame Web, again, not really a hag. She's more like a sophisticated granny with a blindfold.
As I sit here with the three of us at this table, because I think we recently got served a question and you answered that you might be the Madame Web if you had an inspiration from a comic book world. And I'm picturing you as Madame Web, Drac as Agatha Harkness, but, you know, in your granny hero personified. And I'm just waiting to discover mine.
Could be Granny Goodness too. We talked about that.
Yeah, I can see that.
Episode, so. Totally. But this isn't about you anymore, Drac. I was asking about myself.
What granny would you be? Is that your question?
Yeah, that's my question.
Who do you think? Are there any grannies that really speak to
Tangina
you?
Tangina from Poltergeist.
Yes.
Next question.
Yes. An anonymous fan from the Baltics writes, I Belays, huge fan here from the Baltics. In parentheses, believe it or not, you have fans even in Eastern Europe. Anyways, as a trans person who uses two different names in different spaces, I often get mixed up and accidentally say the wrong one, and I was wondering if that has ever happened to you with your drag names and legal names.
No.
Yeah, definitely not, because it was such a sticking point. For many years, we were just known collectively as Boulay Brothers.
Which I prefer.
there was no need to separate us. But I think with the advent of the show and then people having to direct comments or questions to me or you, we really had to separate that and say, okay, this is who we are. And we never, never deviated.
I find it's advantageous to have a person paired with you at all times, because let's say you run into someone you don't want to talk to, you just shut down. You don't really have to engage. You can just sort of stare blankly into the air while the other person steps forward.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or if there's something that you just don't want to do, you can just mark the email as unread and just wait, because the other person will definitely do
it. Exactly. That's why I liked it better when they would just say, it's the Belay Brothers, instead of talking about us individually, because I'm like, you go on out there and do that.
Secrets revealed.
Jamie from the UK writes, I just wanted to tell you how much fun I had seeing you live and getting the opportunity to meet you. The highlight of the night was accidentally flirting hard with Ian, over his gorgeous accent. Parentheses, I can hear him saying this while I write it. I'm sure it won't be long till you haunt us again.
That's a comment, not a question.
That's a statement.
Let's move on.
But one I decided to include because this reminded me that we're the ones with the accents when we go to the UK.
Oh, yeah.
From our very American-centric point of view, we go there and we're like, isn't this cute? We're surrounded by all these people with these weird, charming accents. But Sherry,
we're the weirdos.
We're the weirdos.
Like,
mister.
World of Warcraft will teach you. Main characters speak American English.
Oh, my God.
It's
Sherry,
so stupid.
Your nerd is showing.
Finn from Wisconsin asks, hello, spooky fam. In your recent episode, you talked about what not to do in a meet and greet, and it made me laugh because it's exactly what happened to me. I was so nervous to meet y'all, I totally almost walked off the stage, and Swan had to be like, no, stop. But you were so nice to me as I gave you an embroidery of Swanthula's book nook. I was so nervous, I forgot to give you the part that had my name on it in a card. Anyways, my name is Finn, and y'all are the best. Lots of love from Wisconsin.
It's cute. Another.
Where's the question, sis? Where's the question?
Finn, I want you to know, even though you didn't pose a question, I do still have your embroidered Swanthula's book nook right over at my desk, so thank you.
And you know, it's listener questions sometimes, but also there's listener mail.
Somebody different did the listener questions this time and decided to not pick the questions, but let's go on.
Let's see.
Caroline from Orlando asks, I'm at a point in my career now where I feel like I am stagnating. I look around and it seems like everyone around me is moving up or moving on, and despite my best efforts, I'm stuck where I am. Have you ever dealt with this feeling in your career? And if so, how did you avoid giving into despair or self-doubt?
Unfortunately, our career is like a fucking roller coaster of drama, and it has been for 20 years, so I guess I'm the drama. I guess I'm the problem. But, you know, I have not experienced that before, but I do have friends that have experienced that before. And what I would say is, you might be in the wrong career for one thing. Like, if that's how you feel, you're not loving what you're doing. And I'll tell you, life is much too short to spend your time, most of your time, which all jobs demand, doing something that you don't like to do or around people that you don't like to be around. So, and I know it's like, well, if you have the privilege to quit your job, guess what, Sherry? That's not what it is. You can work it out. Like, you can figure out how to jump ship and do something else. And a lot of times, the universe will take care of you when you're on the right path. So even if you're like, that's scary, I can't do that, I would encourage you to challenge that belief and to just jump off the bridge. I mean, because what's the worst thing that would happen, right?
You just splat, that's all. I'm going to double down on what Drac's saying, but also add this. If you do believe that you're in the correct career, but you are just hitting a roadblock, oftentimes like trying to grind that out will continuously give you the same result, which is a block. Oftentimes all you need is inspiration. So if you do something new, you find some other thing to get excited about, that can often fuel your creative projects or your work challenges to the next level.
Yeah, I want to reiterate that because I hear people that get trapped in these sort of 9-to-5 scenarios or under some sort of bill that they can never catch up for. And they're like, well, I can't follow my dreams because I owe this much on my car. And I'm like, just let it go. Like, let it go.
Choose chaos, mama.
Seriously. Life is just too short. You get one chance. Enjoy yourself while you're here. That's what I say.
Austin from Tennessee writes, with the collaborations with the legend Orville Peck and Drac's rural upbringing, I was wondering if either of you were a fan of country music at all.
Yes.
Yeah. And I'll have to say yes by proxy.
Oh.
Because I did not grow up in a rural area and I had no history with country music. However, when I met Drac many moons ago, we took a fated trip cross country where I was forced to listen to nothing but Patsy Cline and all of her contemporaries. And I learned it all, mama. And it was fun.
I love bluegrass. I love country music. It all has to be old, though. I do not like modern country music at all. It's so phony and ridiculous and put on. But no, seriously, it is. It's like a whole thing now. It's like you see these guys who are like country music stars. Mm-hmm. They sort of like exaggerate and put on. And it's so gross.
I think what you're trying to say is modern country music is nothing but farm emo.
Oh, my God. Word.
Well, I think obviously the further you go back in country music, you get close to blues, you get close to rock and roll and sort of the origins of Americana sound. Yeah. And I think it's great. And I encourage everyone to go back and listen to it.
I had my own road trip experience with music. My boyfriend surprised me on a really long road trip we took by revealing that he is a Celine Dion stan. I was like, mama, what? So anyway, I now love Celine Dion. I have what I think is a pretty great Celine Dion impression too. So anyway.
Oh, you can't set that up without giving us a little slice.
Just to understand, what does that have to do with country music?
It was about the road trip.
She ain't country music.
I mean, I don't know. Celine's going to do some Canadian French country.
Okay, I want to hear this impersonation.
So my impersonation is only one sung word.
That's all you need.
Love.
That's all you got?
Oh, and I do it all the time, too. We'll be silent in bed. Love.
That's why I love you. That's all the time we have for questions this episode. Thank you all for writing in. And remember, if you have a question for us that you would like answered here on the podcast, please email us at creatures@BouletBrothersDracula.com and let us know where you're writing in from. We would love to hear from you. Thank you all for joining us on this episode of the Boulet Brothers Creatures of the Night. The Boulet Brothers Creatures of the Night is a Dread Central production, hosted by the Boulet Brothers with their co-host and producer, Ian DeVogler. Engineered and mixed by Carlos Bueno, with music by Neuron Spectre.